Hello and welcome to the latest Forever Blue podcast. I'm Ian Cheeseman. This is a Manchester City podcast, of course, although generally it's a football podcast anyway. And it's very nice that you have decided to listen to this podcast, download it, shared it, whatever you've done. And I really appreciate that. And I'm also very appreciative of Counting King, who are specialists in certain types of tax credits and business loans. They're based at Exchange Square in Salford, not too far away from Manchester, of course, pretty close to where Manchester United play, just outside the city, and that's where they're based. They're experts, as I say, in what they do. And if you contact them, if you are a business owner or you're involved in a business, particularly a bigger business, but it could be a smaller business, tell them when you look, Google them and find out all about them, get the phone number that Ian sent you from Forever Blue, and I'm sure I know they'll look after you. Also, thanks very much to Amar Development UK, and thanks very much to my three guests tonight, who are all from the Forever Blue team this week. Thought we'd do one which was all in-house just for a week only. We'll get another ex-player or whatever on next week, no doubt. But for this week, because it's been such a big week, shall we say, with the Champions League, the FA Cup and one thing and another, I thought it might be quite nice to get three members of the team on. So we've got Harlan, we've got Adam and we've got Toby. So guys, thanks very much for reacting and coming on. And we've just been watching, because we're recording this on Sunday evening, the other FA Cup semi-final. And obviously Liverpool have been playing too and have beaten Fulham today. So Fulham and Arsenal will now have leapfrogged City to the top of the Premier League, though City have, of course, a game in hand. And it will be City against United, as it was in the FA Cup final last year, in this year's FA Cup final. Though, before the other three guys have their say, I will say, having watched that, the last time I jumped about when a late goal went in was when City scored against Tottenham in the Champions League. And I remember running to my family and hugging them and cheering and being very emotional. I learned the lesson from that. And now if you see me at games, I very rarely react very much when any goal goes in for or against, because I always think to myself, we've got to wait until they kick off again here. There's no certainty that this will be a goal. There'll be some minute touch of a hair that was offside or whatever. It could be disallowed. It could be eight passes back. It could be anything. And I can't not tell you how I hate VAR with a passion. Today, I let myself make the mistake of celebrating when Coventry got the late winner and leaped around the front room where I was watching it and lived to regret it once again. I just think VAR kills the emotion of football. And when you look at the decision that ruled out Coventry's goal, you must have been talking millimetres, a toenail. We're not talking about any advantage being gained by Coventry. It broke them. They lost on penalties. And there we go again. And as we're sitting here now recording this podcast, Nottingham Forest feel very aggrieved in their game against Everton, to the point where they have accused, either directly or indirectly, VAR of being corrupt, and that they had what they claimed was a Luton Town fan on VAR who robbed them of decisions at Everton. Very strong statement, and threatening to take action over that. We have football as well where teams are being deducted points, like Everton and Nottingham Forest, Leicester are under investigation, Chelsea and City are. They're talking about Newcastle and Aston Villa, of course, being potential other victims next season. And it just feels to me as if football is going down the wrong channel. Now, from a City perspective, we're City fans, and City went out of the Champions League to Real Madrid on penalties and went through very narrowly through sheer determination and digging in and team ethic, a little bit of luck, and beat Chelsea in the FA Cup semi-final. So, boy, have we got a lot to talk about in this podcast. So there's the scene set. Those are all the subjects. That's how I feel. I wonder how these three feel. Who wants to start? Who's got the strongest opinions? Who's like a coiled spring who wants to say something? Harlan, come on, you start us off. Pick up any of those subjects you want and tell us what you think.
Well, it is a City podcast, Ian, but Coventry City also were Sky Blue. So, yeah, for them, I feel devastated. Similar to you, I jumped up ranting and raving. Yes, getting sacked in the morning. And then, like you said, back down to earth. Listen, it's one of them. He's tired legs. He's clearly not felt like he needed to stay on side because he thought that he'd made the run at the right time. It must have been a minute and a half before.
You thought he was offside then?
No, but obviously they deem him to be offside. But I think there, even in as a player in a game, you're not going to think. But he's clearly thought he's on. Do you know what I mean? Like he's clearly just. He's not.
He's getting no advantage because he actually stepped back when he got the ball, and the defender's got goal side. Now I know that the rule is the rule, but come on, when you've got such a fractional decision that's going to decide a football match, it's the wrong way to go about it. Surely, isn't
it? He's not had the opportunity, and has he to jump back onside by a toenail to then make the running behind, but. Like you said, once the United player gets goal side of him again, obviously it isn't a new phase of player, but United have regained whatever they feel they have lost as an advantage. But listen, I can see why VAR works when used correctly. However, I'd much prefer Wenger's ruling of daylight, at least some clear advantage of daylight between players. So, next year, this is the thing that annoys me. Next year, that goal counts because the new rule would be that the back of your heel, so long as one part of your body is level with the defender, you're on. I think that's a miles better way of doing it than one part of your body is off. You're off. And you know, all this line, the lines that they draw, you should have to be able to fit a line between two players in clear daylight to say he's ahead of him. If your body's level, but your arm, you know, the top part of your arm is off, how can you be offside? You know, if the ball's on the floor, what are you going to do? Get on the floor and roll it in with your shoulder. If that part of your body was offside, it's rubbish and it needs looking at. But in terms of the Everton thing and the Forest thing today, I mean, listen,
I've not seen it, Ian,
but. It does. Listen, I watch another podcast called Under the Cosh. I don't know if any of the guys on here watch it or you've seen any of it or anything like that. John Parkin does it with a couple of other lads. They've had referees on before. Jeff Winter's been on there, a couple of other referees from the past, from the 90s and early 2000s. They've actually admitted on there that there was bribes, that there was all sorts happening in the 90s and 2000s about, you know, players trying to put their arm around you in a tunnel before a game, asking how your wife and your kids are to try and get an advantage on the football pitch. That referees have openly admitted that they've not booked players because, it'd ruin the game if I booked him now. Listen, as far as I'm concerned, Ian, if you clean somebody out and it's a yellow card offence and 30 seconds later you commit a worse foul and get nothing for it, one, the referee sets a bad example and a bad precedent for the rest of the players on the pitch. And two, why does it matter how long your last yellow card was before it? If it's a second yellow card, it's a second yellow card.
You know, happened in the World Cup final, didn't it? You know, when France were playing in that World Cup final and Nigel de Jong did something to... Didn't he put his foot into Zidane's chest or something? And Howard
Xabi Alonso, Xabi Alonso.
Yeah. And Howard Webb said, I don't want to ruin the game. I didn't want to send... It was a red card, he admitted, but I thought I'd have ruined the game and have sent him off.
Yeah, but at that point
we are venturing into a different area here.
Yeah, but at that point, though, the referee is influencing the game based on what he would like the game to run like, not based on how the game is going. You're there to referee the game to make sure it runs as it should, with the rules being the fundamental aspect of all of that. Not, you know, I don't want to send him off because it'll ruin the spectacle. Listen, nobody cares about that. At the end of the day, if you need to go off, you need to go off. I think that the Premier League, one, opened a can of worms, set a really odd precedent when they came out with the 115 charges, when they did, knowing full well that they've not yet got a contingency plan in place to punish us for that if we are guilty or found guilty. I also think that there'll be a lot of other stuff that happens as a result of that, i.e. if they were to relegate us, there'd be teams saying, yeah, but when they were first charged, we would have been in the Premier League, or, you know, what do you do with the Championship then? And what do you do with League One and League Two? And they've not thought about it before they made it public knowledge that we were potentially going to be charged with 115 charges. And do you know what, Ian? We know why the rules were created. We know why FFP is even a thing. We know that it was always, you know, to try and, you know, prevent the cartel from being challenged. And I think that we need to do everything in our power to make sure that we push the Premier League as far as we can to try and unearth some uncertainties that we're not quite sure about from years gone by. Because I am sure that between the 90s, 2000s and now, that there have been things that have been let slide, the skeletons in closets, there's all sorts of stuff, and we're being used as a smoke and mirror screen for everything else that's been going on. And they've not
let me stop you there and bring the other guys in, and because that's another load of subjects we can talk about. Toby, you've been sitting there measuredly listening. You heard my little introduction, which is the matches, the charges that have been made, the VAR, what's happening to other clubs. It does feel as if, you know, we should be, as football fans, sitting here talking about football, about tactics, about how much we love our club. But there's so much going on in the world of football. I've been a sports journalist for a long time. And I remember when I was working at the BBC, laughing, really, at rugby league, who constantly changed rules, who kept bringing in different systems for leagues of how you qualify, and instead of first past the post, you would have this playoffs at the end of the year. Football's now, just as to me, has gone down the same rabbit hole. We're now talking about a Champions League with extra games next year, which is going to be a league format where the top eight go into automatically go through to the last 32, the 16 below go into a playoff game. And I'm thinking, what on earth is that? How long will it be? FIFA this week as well, I'll chuck this one in. FIFA have apparently now changed their rules that might allow for Premier League games to be moved abroad. You know, we seem to be going in a weird direction here. Toby, what do you want to talk about from all the things that I've thrown at you?
Oh, you've overwhelmed me a bit. Look, I went on a rant about, God, it must have been about 2 months ago or a month and a half ago on this podcast. And I said that, fundamentally, this sport, like every other sport, but this sport especially, is for the fans. If you take that away, if you take us away from that equation, they don't get paid much money. You know, you look at Coventry today selling out for a semi-final. That's the story we want to talk about. I don't want to talk about them getting, you know, robbed in a semi-final. You know, the fact they got there was incredible, and we have to really herald that achievement. And it was a shame they just missed out, and whether we want to say it's fair or unfair, whatever. But this sport is for the fans, and I've never seen anyone get so tribal over a game of football like I've seen any set of fans, whether it's City, whether it's United, whether it's anyone. And that's what we have to protect. And I think all of your points support that as we bring in VAR and we bring in more games that slow and a broad game as well. So I think it's very ironic that I'm wearing a American football jumper, by the way, when their games are getting constantly moved abroad. But the more that we do this, the more we take it away from the fans. You know, I said on that podcast that, you know, bringing in these Champions League games, you're slowly taking the sport away from the fans because people can afford it less. And it's such a shame to see. Because without us, there's nothing. You know, without fans, I go every week. Ian, you've been going every game for years. Harlan, you go. I'm not sure if you're a match going fan, Adam, as well. But it doesn't matter because we all pay for our TV subscriptions, for season tickets, for shirts, for everything. And we drive it. And these players wouldn't get paid as much. The people at the top wouldn't even be given the opportunity to be corrupt if it wasn't for us. In terms of VAR, I'm for the right decision, right? It's great to see great moments, but, and you know, you talk about, Harlan's been talking about VAR and it off, and you've been talking about being off by a hair. Wherever we put the line, wherever we put the point of, oh, this is offside here and there should be a bit of daylight, we're going to have marginal decisions. It doesn't matter if you give them a little bit of daylight, wherever you put it, there's going to be fractional decisions where you go, oh, that's so unlucky. But it is
just before you finish, isn't the point I'm making really is that because we've introduced VAR, and Nottingham Forest, obviously, with their statement today, are accusing, directly, indirectly, however you want to look at it, they're actually accusing the VAR of being corrupt or being broken, right? And there will be people who will watch that Coventry game against United and go, the last thing the FA wanted was Coventry City to get to the final. They wanted it to be City against United or Chelsea against United. And so that was corrupt. The referee and the linesman gave the goal. So there had to be a clear and obvious mistake.
Well, there was.
To be overturned. I'm not,
but it's offside.
It was so fractional that there used to be a rule, perhaps you don't remember it, that you give the benefit of the doubt to the attacking player.
Yeah, but where do you draw that line? Like, that's my problem. Offside's offside. And that's one thing. And to be honest, the whole minute and a half thing, that's where the automated offsides, which they've approved, and they've approved the Champions League, which actually works, that timing will go, because that automated offsides will make it so much easier to get an offside. That's actually the only thing about VAR that I quite like, because offside's a fact. Maybe you can turn to the Liverpool Spurs game earlier on this season and go, that was ridiculous and that was human error. But in every other instance, offside is a fact. You're either on or offside. And if you introduce benefit of the doubt and having a little bit of given to the attacker, then you're making it an opinion. And I think we just need to leave that, because then, you know, we talk about VAR bringing in more controversy. If you then bring in a bit of, oh, right, benefit of the doubt, then you're making offside an opinion, and then you're going to cause more debate. Why not leave the bit like the goal line decision technology? Exactly the same thing. It's a fact. It's either over the line or not over the line. Offside is either, you're either on or offside, whether it be marginal. If that was the other way around, and Man United had scored that goal and it got ruled out by VAR, we'd all be sitting here laughing, and it's great. But because it's not, and it hasn't gone the way that we've wanted it to go, we're a bit, it's a little bit, I know you're shaking your head.
As much as I would laugh that the fact that it had been disallowed by VAR if they'd scored it, I would still say it was wrong, because it takes away, this is where you've got to take the tribalism out of it, right? So obviously I've illustrated my hatred of VAR because of my own emotional reactions to the two things that I cared about. But you could step back right back from it and just watch a neutral game that you really don't care about. And to watch that emotion being sucked out of football. Now, I accept that if an instant decision is made by an automated system, that would be far better, and obviously would take away the element, at least the suggestion of corruption. Although I personally think that goal line technology, tennis technology, of whether it sits the line or not, is very different than offside, where all the people involved are moving, the ball's moving. The pictures that are taken by a camera, 16 frames or 32 frames a second. So the actual moment when the ball left the foot and the moment when that picture is taken and those lines are drawn can never be accurate, which is, for me, why you let the officials in the stadium make the best judgment they can. And the VAR is only used when they go, hang on a minute, you've got this completely wrong. It's 2 foot past. How did you not see that? That's when you make that, when the VAR comes in or the other decision's made. But before you come back again, Toby, we've not heard from Adam yet. He's been sitting there simmering. So let's hear from Adam on any of the subjects we're talking about, Adam, any of them.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen the games today, so I'm not commenting specifically on any goals or disallowed decisions today. But I have believed all along that VAR is not designed to get to the truth. It is designed to stage manage. And football, more and more, has become like Big Daddy wrestling. Richard Masters comes out and says, oh, you know, football has never been so successful. There's nothing better than a last day title decider. And hey, presto, we've had four last day title deciders in the last decade and none in the previous 20 years. They want the title decider because they want to sell the TV deals. Football has become all about money. And when you start having billions and billions of pounds involved in a business, any business is going to be corrupt. And we are idiots if we believe that this is a sporting enterprise anymore. It's not. It's an entertainment industry with billions of pounds involved. And they don't care whether it's offside or not. I have to disagree with Toby that offside is offside and onside is onside, because when they first brought VAR in, we had a goal where Raheem Sterling was adjudged to be offside by a toenail. And then the next day it came out, there were three photographs three frames of the 24 frames a second that you're talking about there, Ian. And in the first frame of the three, where the ball looked to be on his foot, it was onside. And on the third frame, where the ball looked to be on his foot, it was offside. And they chose to use the third frame. They never explained why, and they've never even clarified since what they do in that situation. You have United and Liverpool, the only two Premier League teams that don't have screens in their stadiums. And for that reason, fans in the stadiums do not get to see. We don't have mic'd up refs. We don't get to hear what's going on. We just get told that was a goal, that wasn't a goal. There's no point going to the game anymore because you might as well just watch the game. And at the end, they just tell you why Liverpool won.
Very strong stuff, but I've got to say, I tend to agree with you. And I'm not one who subscribes to corruption. I desperately don't want to believe that our game is corrupt. I'm sure I'm not the only one, thousands of pounds travelling all over the country, all over Europe, all over the world. If I found out that the game I was watching, any game I'm watching, has been corrupted in any small way, then I have wasted my money. I have wasted. Yes, I'm a fan, I'm a supporter, and I have my club at heart and everything, and it's been great watching them win all these trophies, but I'm watching a sport. And you, Adam, I suppose your actions speak louder than words. When I first got to know you, you were on the City Matters Committee, battling for fans, for fairness, you know, all the things that Mark Todd does now, who comes on. You were there, right at the cutting edge of all that. And I've heard your disillusionment grow, and you seem to have backed away. So is that why you've done what you've done?
Yeah, I mean, I do believe that. And I think there's further evidence this year with this additional minutes. You know, ever since that World Cup 18 months ago, there were supposed to be more additional minutes dependent on, you know, the time that's been wasted. But how is it when we're 1-0 down, there's three additional minutes? When Liverpool are 1-0 down, there's nine additional minutes. It happens week after week after week. It's there to stage manage a close finish. I really do believe that. And I really do believe it's like going to a big daddy fight and cheering for the other guy to win. You are wasting your money, and that is why I've stopped going after 43 years.
What do you say, Harlan?
Look, I get where Toby's coming from about onsides, you know, onsides, onside, offside, offside, in a sense. But for me, the daylight thing coming in, it allows the striker or the forward player to gain what a defender gets away with, like, i.e. today. So the defender's positioning could have been all wrong. He could have been flat-footed. He could have been lacking concentration due to fatigue or due to the fact that he just thought that it was already going to be a penalty shootout. And the striker, or the winger, shall I say, is far much more concentrated on one last chance. He's got a bit giddy, he's got a bit excited, and he's got a bit early. However, the defender's got away with it. He thinks that he's been skinned. He thinks that his team have conceded, and he thinks that they're crashing out the FA Cup. And then he gets away with it. Whereas the forward player is penalised for being on the front foot, not the back foot, the front foot, wanting to be positive, wanting to get his side a goal. Defenders get away with far too much now because of VAR. Defenders used to be made to answer for their mistakes, and now they're not.
You're right, I agree. But what Adam's point is, and what you're talking about, you're assuming that everything isn't corrupt, and that's what I want to believe as well. What do you say to what Adam's saying about, you know, he feels that the introduction of these things and the way things have gone, he's explained it very eloquently, means that we're watching potentially a corrupt game.
Ian, listen, I don't not think it's corrupt. What I was saying before was that I think that if the Premier League wants it, I'm sure that Caldoun wants it. And you're going to start finger-pointing at us, they'll be finger-pointing at you. And they'll be finger-pointing from 92 when the Sky money came in. They'll be finger-pointing all the way through the 90s, all the way into the early 2000s. You know, I'm sure that there was a couple of dodgy things happening maybe potentially in that 99 season. You know, a couple of instances where United make it seem like they won that treble and dominated every game and won every game convincingly. They won two by the skin of their teeth. You know, the title swung back in their favour towards the end. Now, I'm not saying that was due to corruption, but what I am saying is during seasons in years gone by, things would have been allowed to happen. There was no FFP. You're allowed to spend what you wanted. You know, it's funny, really, that, you know, Chelsea got away with it for a number of years, and they're always seen as the little brother in all of this furore that surrounds us. They're always seen as the one that you know, well, you can't penalise them because it happened in 2004 and really it wasn't a huge issue. They weren't challenging regularly enough. And then when Pep came in and they realised, oh dear, like, you know, he is the Messiah. He is going to come and he probably is going to get this City team to be even better and even better and even better year on year, that all of a sudden all this stuff started to be pointed at us.
Coming back to what we're talking about, though, the evidence, another big talking point this week has been why Pep was very angry about the fact that City's FA Cup semi-final was played on the Saturday. Why wasn't it played on the Sunday? Now, the reason for that is because, first of all, the BBC wanted to have the City-Chelsea game and their slot. So they got it in their slot. And unless somebody correct me if I'm wrong, the police, because the Saturday slot couldn't be at 3 o'clock because of the blackout for TV games at 3 o'clock, it had to be in the evening. The London police didn't want Manchester United's semi-final at Wembley in that Saturday evening slot. So the City game had to be played therefore on the Saturday. Now that might not be corruption that's led to that. It certainly feels very unfair. But what it illustrates, like all these things do, the new Champions League, the doing away with FA Cup replays, another thing I don't personally agree with, is because everything is about making the rich richer and the poor, if I want to get political, as we can almost see in life at the moment, that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Now, we happen to be City fans, so we could argue, we could sit here quite smugly, not really caring, because City won the treble last year, won 5 trophies, win an FA Cup final again, in pole position, not today, literally, because of Liverpool and Arsenal winning, but in pole position to win the league again. We are that big, powerful, rich club now. And Pep, at his press conference on Friday, when he was asked about the doing away with FA Cup replays, I think the question was to see whether he would have any empathy or sympathy for the Football League clubs who have been complaining and the non-league clubs about the loss of replays and the loss of the dream. And he sort of said, well, I can see why the Football League clubs would object to it, but it suits us. And he was being quite honest there, actually. He was actually being quite honest.
Everything you just said, yes, we're massively successful, but it's all under a cloud at the moment because it's not as if we can enjoy... We can enjoy it, but it's not as if we can enjoy it in the domain, is it? It's every single... There's all kinds of fans. When I go to the Bolton games and work at the Bolton games, there's fans of other clubs. Who do you support then? Are you a Bolton fan? No, I'm a City fan. Oh, City, yeah. Ooh, FFP. And I said to you on the podcast years ago with Paul, it's the thing that every football fan of every other club, unless they come from a similar type of background to what City fans originally did, and that have, you know, of course, your dads and granddads and things have put into their grandchildren and granddaughters, and that it's part of the family DNA to be humble and to enjoy the working class City fanism that we have. Any fan of any club that just wants to point a finger they hate us. They absolutely hate us. We've become the most hated side in world football, and it's all under the cloud, so we can't enjoy it and talk to people in a pub and say you're a City fan now without someone saying you cheats. Your club's cheat. I'm not cheat. You don't know that anything has been done untoward. It's regurgitated crap. Everybody wants to be able to say it because it makes them all feel like they're part of one cult. And what you're saying there, Ian, in terms of the corruption, I'm not sure how much I believe the game is fully corrupt throughout. I believe there are things that are manipulated to suit certain sides. I agree with Adam on that side of things. And I agree that at times in games, referees, like I said before, don't book players because they want to affect results in a way. And I think that I do agree with Adam that he would love the product to be the final day of the season because it sells better. It creates more of a furore around it. It creates a Super Bowl type event. But I definitely believe that we are being used as the side that have broken rules, that are a corrupt side, that are dirty oil money club, da 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 da. Because the Premier League know they've got skeletons in their closet and they want to use us as a smokescreen for what they've allowed to slip through the net in the last 30 years.
Toby?
I mean, when it comes to FFP, I've said before, people say it. And if that if that's all they've got to say about us anymore, then like I've said it before, we win. Like we win. If you can only, like, especially United fans, if that's all you can come up against us now, then we've already won the conversation. Like, and you know, I just think we should enjoy the moments. And you know, like I said it as well, you know, even if they did take the time, I mean, I don't think they will. I don't think they can charge us. I think that the political debate, like Haaland says, around it is too much. That the landslide and the ripples it would cause, banning us or relegating us or doing whatever, deducting us point, taking titles away, whatever, it would be too much. But even if they did, you know, those moments that we've had, I was in Istanbul, I was at the FA Cup final last year. I went to, I think it was 56 games out of 60 last season, or 57 if you include the Community Shield. But that doesn't take any of those memories away from me or any of the other fans that went to those games and felt those moments and went there in the chucking down rain in Manchester for the title parade. It doesn't take those moments away. You can't take those moments away from a football fan. And I think ultimately we forget that this sport is for the fans. And when we have those moments, you can't take them away. You take the titles away, sure, but you can't take those memories. Personally, I don't think anything's going to happen with the FFP stuff. I think it'll end up like the Champions League scenario did, where I don't know how exactly, but it will go away or will be found innocent. Too much. There's too much of a tidal wave of shock waves that will happen if they were to, and too much of almost like a butterfly effect and everything else. But
let's leave FFP for now, because that's something that will rear its head again whenever the next stage happens. Let me ask all three of you simple questions. Like, so are you in favour of Toby, while you're talking, FA Cup replays, should we do away with them?
Well, it's easy for me to say yes, because like Pep says, it benefits us. You know, we've got a very crowded season. Now it's been made even more crowded by 10 Champions League games before Christmas.
Well, let's boil this down. So why they're doing away with replays is so that clubs like City can play more bigger games in the Champions League, because there's more space in the calendar. So as a City fan, you know, just
it's
be
great.
Honest,
it's
you'd
great.
Rather have the Champions League than FA Cup replays.
As a City fan, as someone sitting here thinking about the fixtures and thinking about how many games we're really playing, yes, it benefits us. As a football fan, I sit here and I go, 20 of the, what was it, 700 and whatever clubs that compete in the FA Cup were consulted about that decision, and they made the decision without those other clubs. And I don't think that all of those clubs would have voted for it. I think most of them would have voted against it. So as a neutral, as a football fan, as someone who loves football, I think it's the wrong decision. Or it's a decision that should have been consulted with every club that competes in the FA Cup, not something that was consulted with just the Premier League. Because, of course, the Premier League teams, especially the likes of Manchester City, Manchester United, and all the other clubs that play countless games across a season, are going to say, yes, we want to scrap replays, because it means they're playing less games, potentially. Excuse me, potentially.
Toby, you now have the casting vote. You
don't
have to consult anybody. It's your decision, are there FA Cup replays next year?
Yes.
Adam.
Yes, absolutely. And then, you know, I remember going to see us play Watford, I think, in about, I'm going to guess, about 1985. And I think we played on a rainy night. Where it was a really drab game for 2 hours, and we drew. And then we went away and played a replay down there. And we played another 2 hours down there and drew. And then we brought them back to our place for a third one. And I've got a feeling it went to about 80 minutes and then we lost. And that was about an FA Cup fourth round replay. And that sounds terrible, and it was. But the fact is, I still remember that 40 years later, but I couldn't tell you how many times we played Shakhtar Donetsk in the last 10 years. I really couldn't care less about that.
Well, I think there's a lot of City fans who would sort of agree with that, really. You know, that you, when you talk to City fans, and I talk to a lot of them, of course, doing me vlogging and everything like that, there's so much love for the domestic game, and the European game is not something that they warm as much to. Next season, there's going to be an extra home game, guaranteed. Possibly another extra home game before you get to the last 16, if City don't finish in the top eight. It just basically stretches everybody's patience all the more. There are going to be Champions League games next year that are effectively dead rubbers. Or
and Ian, over and above that, there are going to be game. There are not going. There's not going to be an equality of home and away. You're going to play some teams home, some teams in away. It's the loss of sport and integrity. And again, it comes back to this idea that it's not about the sport anymore. It's about the money generation of an entertainment industry, and that's not sport.
But we almost got the Super League. City were in it, wanted to be in it. They can make all the excuses about why they pulled out once it collapsed, but they wanted to be in it. I don't believe that they weren't a driving force behind it. They're all about global expansion. And this new Champions League is just basically the Super League by the back door, isn't it? Get rid of the FA Cup replays. Get rid of the League Cup semi-final over two legs. In fact, put the under-21s in the League Cup. Do everything you can to increase the number of European games, because we don't particularly want fans to travel, and they'll just go and cherry pick one or two. But we want to get rid of all these people who go to every game, or, you know, these obsessive Ian, fans. That's not what they want, is it?
Ian, we were covering this on the radio the other night, on Thursday night, and the baffling part of it all is that they're going to have FA Cup replays up to the first round proper. All the preliminary rounds, all the qualifying rounds, the Atherton Colliery's, Radcliffe, all of them sides, Curzon Ashton, Stalybridge Celtic, they can all take part in the FA Cup. They can play replays all the way up to the first round proper, and then it's scrapped. You know, again, like Adam's saying, the integrity of the, you know, they've got used to playing replays, they've got used to managing games in a way where, you know, let's not forget these lads, you know, and I know this is a fact, I know a lot of the lads down at Atherton, you know, they're working during the week. They've got wives and kids. They've got no cryotherapy chambers. They've got no sports scientists at the club. They've got no physiotherapists. They've got a young intern from a university local to us in Bolton. And they have to work. They have to play twice a week. If there's a waterlogged pitch, they've got to play three games a week. They've got to play Saturday, Tuesday and Thursday. Now, yes, I don't think, as wonderful as we think they all are, that Kyle Walker really cares about the fact that a bloke in Atherton has got to go and play three games a week. I've no access to cryotherapy or hydrotherapy pools. I've no access to a proper physiotherapist or recovery, and then has to go to work the next day and has a wife and a newborn child. Because why would he? Because he's so far removed from that world now, whether he came through in Sheffield or not, it doesn't matter anymore. I'm not saying he's not a humble guy, but he wants to win trophies and silverware, and that for me is why it's a completely different world. But it goes back to what we were saying before, and not to go back over old ground, but VAR in one fixture, but not in another. So yeah. VAR at a Premier League ground, not at a non-league ground or an EFL ground. But then in the next round, that club could end up losing out because of VAR, but they didn't play with it in the last round. And then it comes in the semi-final and the final. So had that game been at Coventry in two rounds earlier today, that goal would have counted. But today exactly. It doesn't count. And Coventry went through in this cup competition to get to the point they got to today because of a decision, if I remember rightly, in about the third or fourth round where there was an offside and they got away with it. So it's all wrong. It's all wrong. And like I said, I agree with Adam. It's being made up as we go along. And it is all to benefit the top teams. And that includes Manchester City. And I think if we look back and we actually take ourselves back to when we were in big trouble, not the first time in my lifetime in 99, but if we take ourselves back to when you told me we were in trouble in the early 2000s, in 2004 and 5, and John Ward had to in effect save us, we needed replays back then. We needed replays. Replays would have paid our players' wages. Replays would have kept our club afloat. So it's about time we actually start to realise that, yeah, we want silverware, but I want football more than I want to win silverware. And I'll tell you what, Ian, now we've won it all. If it all disappeared tomorrow and we could go back to finishing ninth in the league table, we had FA Cup replays for all English sides, and we could genuinely just go, sing, be proud, enjoy the fact that we've been there, done it, worn the T-shirt, then I'm quite frankly, for the benefit of the whole of football and to keep some integrity in it, I'd be happy to literally say thank you very much, but get it back to how it was before.
Well, I think for the remainder of this podcast, it's been fascinating to listen to your different opinions, and they are sometimes different on some of these subjects. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate your honesty as well. Obviously, we're a Manchester City podcast, and City lost out in midweek to Real Madrid in the Champions League and then went through in the FA Cup. Let's talk about those games and where City are now. Forget all the VARs, forget all of the other things we've been talking about. Obviously, the Champions League is the first one we'll talk about. City had drawn over there in Madrid. Fully deserved the 3-0 draw. There were phases of the game when City were on top, phases when they were on top. And then the home game came along. I was surprised that Madrid, and presumably Pep and the City players were, decided to sit very, very deep and do the so-called low block. They'd obviously watched Arsenal and Liverpool succeed with that and thought, that's what we're going to do, which I didn't anticipate at all. They got an early goal. It worked for them. They went through on penalties and City went out. What's your sort of assessment, really, of that, Toby? I mean, you spoke to me on the vlog after the game when you were disappointed. So sum up how you would feel about the repercussions of that game.
Yeah, I mean, I said yesterday before the game, and I said after on Wednesday that we couldn't let that be a reason to not kick on, and because we've still got two titles to fight for, without sounding too sort of selfish. So obviously it was a disappointing result, of course it was, but we can't win these things every year. No club, because we don't want to be Man United fans here. No football club, no team is entitled to win every trophy every year, or be in the mix for every trophy every year. You know, you hear Man United fans these days, and I hear it because I live in the South, so I got all of them. So you hear them down here, and all they ever do is moan about the fact they're not in a title race, and moan about the fact they should be there, that they should be in it. They're Man United, they should be in a title race. And all I have to sit there and I go, you have no divine... Gary Neville's the worst for it. You have no team has any divine right to be fighting for titles, to be winning titles every single year. None, not a single one. Like Haaland's just said, remember where the club's come from. So, of course, it's disappointing. Of course, we'd love to be. And I think this year, especially with it being a Wembley, it would have been a great spectacle for us as English fans. For me, it would have been great. I've said it multiple times. I can pretty much see Wembley from my house. So that's great. But as I say, no team has any divine right to be winning every trophy every year. And we've been treated in the Pep era over the last 7 years to some pretty incredible football and some pretty immense titles and records. So let's not get ahead of ourselves. Of course, it's a disappointing result and it's the harshest way to go out. Of course it is. But like I say, we've still got two titles to fight for. Let's be happy we're still in those. We're now in an FA Cup final against Man United again. It was 150 odd years to wait and they said it in the commentary of the FA Cup game just now, 150 odd years for a Manchester Derby FA Cup final. And now we've got two in 2 years. Let's just hope that it ends up pretty similar to the last one. Well, we scored 15 seconds in. That was great. But we've also got a Premier League title to fight for, and whether or not it's corrupt or whether there's something going on with the refs and with VAR and whatever, we've got a three-horse race, which of course is great for entertainment if you're watching it. So let's just boast the almost supremacy of the Premier League and how it does draw up these great stories where you've now got three teams fighting for the league title. So yeah, of course I'm disappointed about Wednesday, but we've got the rest of the season now, and let's just kick on and try and go for those trophies, because we've now all got the same amount of games to the end of the season, and it's going to be a good run-in, I think.
Was that the right, or was that a fair, not the right, but is that a fair result on Wednesday, Adam, in your opinion, since you're going out?
I'm a big believer that there's no such, you know, people always talk about, who deserves to win this game and who deserves to win that game. And I think that the system of counting the goals that were scored is a pretty good way of assessing who deserves to win a game. And, you know, barring the exceptional circumstances where there might be a shocking refereeing decision or whatever, I generally figure that whoever wins the game, whoever scores the most goals deserves to win the game. We lost that game. It's Real Madrid. They've got some amazing players, and so have we. We beat them last year. We lost to them this year. Personally, although it was heartbreaking on the night, I've recovered from it pretty quickly, because the difference now from any other time in the past is that we'll be there or thereabouts again next year. You're pretty sure we'll get into a quarter final again next year. So, you know, we have a chance to win it next year. We won a treble last year that we thought was hardly possible. The idea that we would win it, just do it all again this year, while I got sucked into it for a little while, is ridiculous. And the idea that, you know, because we can't win the Champions League, it's going to mean a season of failure, I just don't buy into at all. We've been around for 130 years. 129 of those years, we didn't win the European Cup. And all those 129 years weren't terrible. So this year doesn't have to be terrible just because we're not going to be there winning the European Cup. It's absolutely vital that we win the league because certainly don't want Liverpool to win it. Don't really want Arteta to win it. Four in a row would be just an immense achievement. And we also now have the small matter of another FA Cup final against United. Again, we waited 130 years for that, and we've got two coming along in a row. We have to go there and beat United and win the double. And if we do that, it'll be the second greatest season we've ever had. And I'll take that.
Alan, you more than anybody will be aware of the debate about Erling Haaland. Obviously, virtually the same as your name, Haaland. Yeah. So it gets confusing. Yeah. And I know that you were quite outspoken at one stage about Haaland and people criticised you for it. That goes with having an opinion. And since then, one or two people have actually come round to some of the things that you said. And after the game against Real Madrid, people pointed out that Haaland, suggested that Haaland doesn't show up in the big games, that he was, anonymous in the both games against Real Madrid. And then, of course, he didn't play in the semi-final. And I know it was the FA Cup semi-final. I know it was a different type of game and City crawled over the line, but he didn't play in that and City won. So where are you now? You've had a lot of time to think about this. You've had stick. You've had people praising you. Where are you now on, how has Haaland figured in these two big games? First of all, playing and not contributing a lot, arguably, in the Madrid games, and then not playing in the win against Chelsea at Wembley.
Well, it was October, wasn't it, when I said it, Ian? And believe it or not, that was actually when he was scoring twos and threes every week towards the start of the season. And I wasn't convinced. I don't care about numbers, me. Do you know what I mean? I use my eyes to watch football. And granted, if he wants to be a tapping merchant, he wants to get the numbers on the charts and win all the awards in the world. I mean, it's laughable that people were arguing with me on Twitter telling me that he should have won the Ballon d'Or. The Ballon d'Or is the best footballer in the world award. Now, whether it's an award that should have gone to Messi or not based on his achievements last year, he's the best footballer I've ever seen live. I've watched him three times. He mesmerises me. He's a beautiful footballer to watch play. Ronaldinho, Kaká. Go all the way into my youth, Ronaldinho, Kaká, Joe Cole, for example, somebody that is well underappreciated in the world of football. Joe Cole, scintillating number 10, somebody that was born on the streets, played in cages, went through the academy of football at West Ham. Yes, numbers play a large part in whether you should win awards, and rightfully so, but they're not the be-all and end-all of everything ever in football. On that actual podcast back in October, and I was on with Ian Bowyer that night, and I think I was misinterpreted when I asked Ian Bowyer, I don't know if you've ever seen FIFA, Ian. And people thought I was saying, why are you asking Ian Bowyer if he's played FIFA or if his grandkids play FIFA? And they thought I was trying to compare a computer game to real life football. What I was saying is, and because I've got real life experience working with young people of this, it's that when young people ask me who my favourite City player is and I tell them Bernardo Silva, they say, ooh, why? He's rubbish. And these kids are like 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. Surely it's Haaland, and they've got a Haaland shirt on and they've got the hair in a pony, and you think, right, this is because he's got unbelievable pace on FIFA, he can dribble like nobody else. This is the world we're living in. Now, we're conditioning our younger people and our young kids to think that numbers and stats dictate everything. Said it time and time and time again, and actually it's weird actually because Adam was on the last time I said this and I think he was nodding. Bernardo Silva will not get you any points on fantasy football, on fantasy Premier League. Very rare will he get you any major points on that, because what he does doesn't quantify as a correct variable on that game, because he didn't score, didn't assist, nobody picks centre halves on fantasy football. They pick wing backs and full backs because they cross the ball in and get a lot of assists. Alexander Arnold's probably the most successful fullback in FPL for years, because he whips 30 balls a game in, and 9 times out of 10 a ball will fall and then it's up to someone to tap it in. But the frustrating thing is with Haaland, Ian, because he gets the numbers, he gets away with murder. And again, for the last couple of months, I've seen him get progressively worse, nick a goal, get away with it, nick a couple of goals here and there. Look, he scores 4 goals in a month, right, but he scores a hat-trick and one, he can have a rest for 2 weeks and City fans will give him no jip, because at the end of the month, it's 4 goals in 4 games. 1 goal per game. No, I'm sorry, I don't work on averages, me. I work on performance per 90 minutes or per 100 minutes. And his performance is lethargic. He, you know, I got a lot of jip on the last podcast I was on. We all know about that. Lethargic. Only presses when he wants to press. He plays the game on his own terms. Pep's frightened to death of ripping him off the football pitch. And for me, it's like playing with 10 men sometimes. Said it time and time again. But he occupies defenders, right? It's all good occupying defenders. But then when you're not wanting the ball to feet when occupying defenders to give to somebody that's back in the space that you've created, then for me, you're occupying defenders and then hoping that the players that are on the pitch are going to be able to naturally know that the space is there to pick up. But the ball might not arrive because your involvement now is, I'm doing my bit, I'm occupying the defenders. You need to do more than that. You need to wrestle them. It made Johnny Evans look like Maldini when we played United at the Etihad. Johnny Evans is 37. He's left and come back. And he made him look like a Rolls-Royce of a defender. Johnny Evans is clinging on Ian. And Haaland gave him the easiest game of his whole season at United this year. And I don't understand how. He's massive. He's colossal. And when he presses and tracks back, like he did against Madrid, on the one occasion of the night, and you realise, wow, when he opens his legs, he's actually quite frightening. He never presses keepers. He always presses and never slides in to win the ball. He always sits off. Decision-making at times is poor. His effort at times is poor. And I think that, I think it was, who was it that said it? That he's was it you, Toby, that said it? That he's probably guilty because of how well he did last year. He's probably
victim of his own success, yeah.
He's probably achieved that much now that he's the victim of his own success. And I partially agree, but he knows that. He knows that. So now he's resting. He's happy to be on the pitch, and he knows that he's already done his work. And he knows that he can get through games, not having to do as much as everybody else. And you've got young Julian Alvarez on the bench thinking, what do I have to do to get a game here? I'd run the channels, I'd run in behind, I'd come short, I'd drift into midfield, I'd create a bit of an overload on one side of the pitch. It's really frustrating to watch, but in the two games, Ian, non-existent. And one final thing in that, it's all good football fans getting annoyed when teams come and sit behind the ball. Oh, they sat 10 behind the ball, they ruined it. You know, my granddad does it sometimes. He says, not a criticism of my granddad, but he says, oh, they came to ruin the game. Why did they come to ruin the game? They came to win the game in their own way. Like, defending's part of the game. I agree with Omri. Asked the Bolton manager yesterday, you know, do you struggle transitioning sometimes because players think that they've got to play a certain way in the first two thirds and that they don't want to take enough risks through the middle third and play a bit more direct at times because they think that the philosophy has to be adhered to at all times. There was times when Madrid were out of position the other night in out of their defensive shape, and we transitioned really, really slowly. We were really lethargic. We could have got in behind quick. We didn't. We allowed them to bit by bit get back into their defensive shape. And then we have the audacity at the end to blame the fact that they sat in. They didn't sit in at times in the game. There was opportunities for us to break on them. We chose not to take them because we wanted to stick to the plan. And it ended up costing us. And I said this the other month on a very, very famous Forever Blue podcast now and got lambasted for that. And it's, I've been proven right. And it's not about I'm right, you're wrong. But I think I know what I'm watching. And I'm asking the questions to an EFL manager that tries to stick to a similar philosophy. And he's telling me what his philosophy demands and what you should be doing when teams are out of defensive shape when they come to sit 10 behind the ball. And we don't do it enough, and we didn't do it against Madrid. So to blame Madrid for coming and playing anti-football, I think it's poor form.
Last question of this particular podcast, and thanks as always for all three of you for being so expressive and opinionated, but in honest ways, because that's the thing. I mean, what I will not do is do a podcast where I've set people up to say certain things or paid them to. You three are just real people, real fans, real honest views, which I'm sure reflects across City's fandom and indeed across football. I know Haaland's got to go in a minute. He's got an appointment. And so I'm going to ask you this question first, Haaland, which is just a simple one, really. You know, City have six Premier League games to go, four away, two at home, starting with Brighton on Thursday this week and then a trip to Nottingham Forest. And by the way, the next podcast will be recorded on the Monday evening after the Forest game. So if you regularly download the podcast and on Sunday night stroke Monday morning, you think, where's the podcast? It'll be 24 hours late because we'll do it on the Monday evening after the Forest game. But those are the next two games, so six to go and an FA Cup final. This isn't a question of entitlement, and I don't think any of the three of you would react that way anyway. I'm just curious to know now, having seen what you've seen, exit from the Champions League, scrape through against Chelsea through great character and determination, which I can only applaud after the exertions that they've been through. Where are City going to win the league? Is City going to win the FA Cup? Are City going to do the double? What's your instinct, Harlan?
Yeah, we'll do the double, Ian. And I think that would have been at stake if we'd have gone through in the Champions League. Would I love to have gone through in the Champions League? Absolutely, I would. And I would have loved to have thought that we'd have been able to do all three. I would have loved to have thought that, listen, if we'd have gone through in the Champions League and somehow lost the game yesterday, and then we'd have been on for a double in terms of league and Champions League, and again, that would have been unbelievable. But I do think that had we gone all the way in the Champions League, it would have potentially cost us the league, and them 2 points that we gained last week would have been lost. The Spurs one is one that stands out for me as the banana skin game. But I think having won there in the cup might give us a bit of belief that we can go there and get a result. Their season's fallen off a bit. Ange has obviously struggled to get performances that he was getting at the start of the season out of his Tottenham side now, and obviously they become heavily reliant on Son. In the absence of Kane, and even when he has a bad game, Tottenham usually have a bad game, and you know it is unfair to expect Son to carry that team. But that's the one game that I'm still quite worried about. If I was worried about any game this season for the rest of the league campaign, listen, United aren't going to play like they did today against us in the cup. It's a reset. It's a brand new game. It's a derby. It has an unbelievable meaning to it, and you know, they'll want to beat us more than ever now because of what we did to them last season and the fact that they want to upset us and stop us from winning a double. But I do think we'll come out on top in that one. I think we will win the league, but I think that we'll have to remain extra, extra, extra concentrated, use all the wisdom and all the character that we've had to show over the years to maintain that. The levels that we've all seen on the documentary, if we've seen it, the demands on each other. And as fans, we've got a job to get our boys over the line again. So, yeah, we went out against Madrid. It's gone. It's been. It's done. We got through yesterday. Probably should have conceded a penalty, but we threw. Be fortunate for that. Look forward to a derby. And sing loud and proud in the Etihad, home and away as well, of course. And make sure that we get the lads over the line. Because if we do a double, Ian, again, it'll be things that I thought I'd never see as a kid.
If you get to the FA Cup final and you manage to get a ticket, Harlan, I'm hoping you'll be wearing it's great to be a blue T-shirt, which are now been produced and are available via the link, which you can find embedded in my YouTube descriptions when I do that. Also in the podcast description. And also if you follow me on Twitter, /X, the pinned tweet at the moment has a link as to how to buy them. They support Teenage Cancer Trust as well, so hope you'll be wearing one at Wembley. But thanks a lot, Harlan. We'll move on to Adam. What's your feeling, Adam? Are you not expecting, but do you think City will win the double, win one of them? Where are you?
Well, I think we'll win the FA Cup. I think United are an appallingly average side with a useless manager, a charlatan of a manager, so we have to go there and win that game. The league, there's no reason why we can't win it. But we are running on empty. My only concern, as I say every year, is what do we do if Rodri goes down? If Rodri stays up and he he's strong enough to play through all these games and we can win all these games, then we won the league, obviously. But I don't think that's a given that's going to happen. I still think there's points to be lost by all three title contenders in the league. And I really don't know how that's going to pan out. So if I had to guess right now, I'd say league will go down to the last day and we'll win the FA Cup.
Toby, where are you?
Same answer as both of these guys. The same as Adam. I think it will be, I think we'll win the FA Cup and I think it will go down to the last day. Premier League, as Harlan said, it's I think it will be Tottenham that will be the worry. I think Arsenal and Liverpool handing us a 2-point lead last weekend, obviously not now, but we've got the game in hand on Thursday. I think that will be hugely pivotal, but I'm confident that we can get both of them over the line now.
My big concern and the reason why I was so excited when I thought Coventry had beaten United is that having beaten them in the FA Cup final last year, despite the fact that I agree with Adam that City are far superior to United, I wouldn't use the word charlatan for the United manager, but I would certainly say incompetent. Perhaps that's the word I'd use. You know, they are just a ragbag lot of individuals, whereas we're a team. But my fear is that somehow, through sheer determination, they will find a way of, like Real Madrid did, of getting past City in that FA Cup final, because they won't be able to stomach losing to two in a row. And if City haven't won the league, which of course is a possibility, none of us know what's going to happen. And I think, Adam, again, you're right to single out Rodri in particular as a vital cog. And he's going to have to play in seven more games at the top of his game to get us through the line to win that double. If we don't win the league, that would improve, in my opinion, City's chances of winning the FA Cup, because you know they then have that extra sort of oomph to try to make sure that the season didn't go empty-handed. But what is for sure is that with seven games to go, boy, are we in for a nail-biting, dramatic end of the season. And if Adam's sceptical, perhaps well-founded theory that everything goes to the last game of the season, if you notice, all three of the title contenders are all at home on the last day of the season. It's almost scripted, isn't it, that it will go to the last day of the season. And West Ham, you would think, at home for City is the most winnable of those games.
I'd just like to say, Ian, very quickly as well, both times we've been in a last day fight with Liverpool, they've played Wolves at home. And this season, they've got Wolves at home on the last day of the season, just as a little superstition thing. Weirdly enough.
Very interesting. Anyway, it's been a fascinating podcast. Thanks very much to Counting King. I remind you that if you Google them, Counting King, very easy to find, Exchange Square, Salford. Look at what they do. If you're involved in business, you own a business, they will save you. I guarantee you a fortune. I've seen what they do. I've seen them do it with big companies that I deal with, that I've had contact with. So I'm not just saying it. I know that it works. So look them up, contact them, tell them I sent you. And they do business loans, they do all sorts of stuff on advice. And AMR Development UK, who've been big supporters of what I've done for the last 2 or 3 years, I'm indebted to them as well. So thanks very much. And don't forget, if you want a Great to Be a Blue t-shirt, they are available. Didn't see any at Wembley yesterday, but hopefully I'll see a load down there on May the 25th. Or maybe at the Etihad, or maybe down at Brighton or whatever. So thanks for everybody who's supporting what I try to do. Have a look at the vlog from Wembley. And I'll be down at Brighton, of course, on Thursday. So if you see me down there, if you're going to the game, come and say hello, make a contribution. And thanks again to Harlan, Toby and Adam and you for listening. Because you know what? Win, lose, draw, disappointment, VAR, no FA Cup replays. Doesn't matter what the scenario is. One thing that never changes is it's great to be a Blue.